All the chairs, which is great.
Perfect.
What did they?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
She's going to be a couple of minutes out, but I think it's. Yeah, I think we'll go ahead and get started. So, good morning. This is the regular scheduled meeting of the Gunnison Valley RTA held in Crestview Town offices. First up on the agenda is the consent agenda. Entertain a motion.
I'll move to adopt the consent agenda as presented.
Second. Nick can have it.
Adoption of the, or approval of the consent agenda has been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Consent agenda passes. Up next is old business. First up is, I don't think we have Rick.
Rick texted, says he wasn't going to be able to make it and didn't have a lot to report regardless.
Okay. So we will skip the airport update.
I did run into him over in Avon 2 days ago. He was like, not you over there.
Next up is our Tourism and Prosperity Partnership report. Andrew.
Thank you guys for having me today. Not a whole lot to report. Winter marketing did kick off in the last week, early this week, so hope to start to see that impacting flight bookings probably in the next week or so. I think Bill, you could probably speak to, it's kind of been a little bit of a lull right now, but hope to kind of start to ramp that up. Overall, we're seeing winter pace slightly ahead of last year, mostly because of rates. Earlier in the winter is pacing further ahead. Later in the winter is a little bit down. Very similar tracking to what the flights are doing. So our marketing campaign is heavily focused in the flight markets. We're trying to drive down those MRGs and bring those higher value further out booking visitors. So that's kicked off and going as of early this week. So hopefully we start to see some movement. That's pretty much all I had for everybody, unless people have specific questions.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Absolutely.
Thanks, Andrew.
Andrew and I've hung out a lot lately.
We have.
Up next is air service update, Bill.
All right. Good morning, everyone. On page 13 in your packet is a little brief report of the results of the past couple of months. July and August were very good months for the Gunnison Airport. In fact, both were all-time records. In fact, August by a considerable margin, I might add. JSX also expanded their flights considerably this summer and was operating up to 12 flights per week and ended up with load factors in the mid-70s. So they're very pleased with the Gunnison market. As for future bookings for fall, we have significant capacity increases all the way through the 25th of October. 3 flights a day, as opposed to 2x daily last year. And I'm pleased to report that bookings seem to be heating up with those capacity increases. So that is really encouraging, you know, to see that the local market is responding well to the capacity increases. Those are United's exact words.
Wasn't that long ago, a couple of years, where we had one flight in the fall.
And we're debating about how to go to 2 flights a day. And when we have one flight a day, should it be the midday turn or the second flight? Now we've got 3. I had a really nice meeting with United Network Planning yesterday, talking specifically about the Gunnison flight program, and they are very pleased. And in fact, they want to plan on a future visit here for one of these meetings, one of their lead network planners. And Andrew, I'm glad you're here, because one of the reasons they'd like to come here is to actually discuss joint marketing opportunities, particularly as they continue to grow the Chicago service, as we've done for this winter. And that kind of leads me into a little update for what we have for the winter. We'll be back down to 2 flights a day through the rest of November. So from the 26th of October until the winter flights fully resume on the 18th of December. And then when that happens, we're back to 3 flights a day from Denver, daily service from Houston. If you recall last year, in order to cut the losses on the MRG, we trimmed Tuesday flights through January, February, and March. And now that they've actually stabilized the pilot attrition issue and also have some more stable costs, they actually had a lower MRG that we discussed 2 months ago when we last had the board meeting. And we're able to also add expanded service from Chicago O'Hare. And that's something that's been a subject of considerable discussion as of late. And I was in Washington, D.C. the week before last and actually met with the U.S. Department of Transportation while I was there for a conference. And we discussed this in depth at the Air Command, but it looks like we're going to have an opportunity to utilize some of the SCASD funds by repurposing the SCASD grant that was intended for summer DFW service and apply it towards the Chicago flight in the winter. So this is very good news. There's all a match here, but this is something that the DOT is very much in favor of. And I confirmed with United yesterday that they're very supportive of that as well, because United has visions on continuing to expand Chicago. From what was really just a 7-flight experiment last winter in February and March that seemed to work out well, we now have a total of 22 round-trip flights scheduled for this winter on 11 weekends. So that's Fridays and Saturdays inbound, returning on Saturdays and Sundays. And they even have visions of growing up beyond that in future years. So really helps fill a void in the route network that United offers in terms of connectivity to the Gunnison Airport. Denver obviously is a really nice growing hub, but we've also found that 3 flights a day is like a perfect schedule for Denver. And to really go beyond that, we should be looking at other hubs. So we've got Houston winter and summer now, and you know, the Chicago O'Hare service with that hub also growing is, you know, the perfect complement to the existing flights that we've had on United. So that's all been good news that I'm reporting on. I do have a little bit of bad news to report related to American Airlines. And the Gunnison Airport relies on one particular mainline aircraft for their winter service. It's the Airbus 319 that has special performance modifications, special engines. And I learned earlier this fall, there are only a total of 24 of these aircraft, these specially high performance aircraft that even exist within their fleet. And they acquired a whole bunch of them at the same time about 12 years ago. And so a lot of them are now coming up for maintenance and internal refurbishments all at the same time. So they're down to the shortest number of aircraft they've ever had in this subfleet this upcoming winter. So unfortunately, they're going to be forced to downgauge the Gunnison service for 2019 to twice daily flights and a CRJ-700. The capacity, except for the holidays, is going to be about the same as last year. But as we discussed at the Air Command, this is an unfortunate step backwards in potential reliability, because the CRJ-700s, as we know, because they used to fly for United Express, aren't as reliable as the more modern equipped Airbus 319s and now the Embraer E175s that are being flown by United. I continue to have constant dialogue with American. I'm trying to see if there are some other options that they can explore creatively. They haven't yet changed the schedules from January forward yet, but I'm told that that is the plan right now, and it'll be adjusted in a forthcoming schedule update. I'm going to see what we can do to possibly salvage that Airbus service. And I've been assured that this is a temporary solution, not a permanent one, because they are evaluating the Airbus 319 for potential summer service in the future, knowing that it will not be supported with a minimum revenue guarantee. That was something that we discussed with the DOT as well, but they are considering that at their own risk as well. So the program is in very good shape. I just, the only setback we have is a temporary one with the likelihood that Americans can be flying the regional jets this winter with twice the capacity, January, February, and March, rather than one daily 319.
Twice the schedule, not the capacity.
Twice the schedule. Thank you.
So there will be a reduction in capacity during the holidays.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons the advanced bookings for United are so strong. And United is now aware of that as well. And may not have an opportunity to supplant that at this point in time, because it's getting pretty close, but they're definitely going to evaluate because they're aware of how strong the bookings are for now in December in particular. You know, the only other thing I was going to add is I had a chance to personally experience a significant upgrade on a flight into Aspen with one of the Embraer E175s. United Express has been talking about installing their aircraft with Starlink in-flight Wi-Fi. It was delayed earlier this year, but it is now starting to happen. And it is an absolute game changer for the in-flight experience. And there are some Starlink-enabled E175s now flying in and out of the Gunnison Airport. They're kind of hit or miss at this point in time, but if you go to flight information on the United app, it'll tell you and promote the fact that this is a Starlink-equipped flight. Banner ad says, time to break the Wi-Fi barrier. And not only is it super fast, faster than my home internet, in fact, it's available from the time you sit down on board the aircraft and log in throughout the entire flight until you pull up at the gate. So it's
complimentary.
Hmm?
Complimentary.
Yeah, and it's complimentary to Mileage Plus members. Yes. So it's kind of revolutionized the in-flight experience. This is really a competitive reaction to Delta that launched free Wi-Fi the year before last to all Delta SkyMiles members, but this is actually a far superior product. I might also add that JSX, it was the first commercial carrier to launch Starlink across their entire fleet. And it's interesting that with JSX and United being the two carriers that fly into Gunnison, that both are going to be offering Starlink.
Bill, and I've been thinking about the American Airlines situation, and you're talking about exploring creative solutions for that. What might those be?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly what I'm.
It's actually pretty cool.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
They basically said, you know, that because they're short on the Airbus 319s, that you know, they were forced to downgauge the flights into Gunnison because two CRJ-700s has about the same capacity as an Airbus 319. The folks in network planning at American, they're relatively new and don't really know the history, particularly some of the airports that also require those 319s. Eagle County Airport serves Vail, Jackson Hole, and a couple of Caribbean destinations, St. Martin and I think St. Thomas are the two. The idea I had, because I had been involved with the flight program at the Eagle County Airport, I said to American, you know, instead of a down gauge at Gunnison, have you ever considered an aircraft up gauge at Eagle, which could support larger aircraft? And now that United is flying MAX 8s into the Eagle County Airport, which is an aircraft that does exist with American, I said, this is one opportunity that you might be able to explore. And they also now have the Airbus A321neos, which are specifically designed as hot and high performance aircraft that have 191 seats in them. And if they could consider either of those aircraft for one of the daily flights between DFW and Eagle, that would free up an Airbus 319 to come into Gunnison.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the creative solutions I've offered. You know,
Bill's been throwing all kinds of stuff at him.
I've been trying.
I mean, the redundancy is not bad, but
right.
I mean, can you say that there's like no night approaches?
Correct.
I mean,
and also in low visibility. If,
yeah.
And we've seen that. If
it, tailwinds.
And if the winds are unfavorable, they do not have an instrument approach into runway 24.
I think that there's been like a locally, like a challenge of trying to, you know, promote the airport. It's like, this is reliable now.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I worry about even what 1 year.
That's exactly what I told America.
Okay.
And you know what? This is a trend we're seeing with American Airlines, not just at the Gunnison Airport, but at the Aspen Airport, which has now been upgraded to all E175s for all of United's flights. It's done this winter, all Delta's flights. It's going to leave American as a sole operator with CRJ-700. It's going to be subject to landing at higher minimums at the Aspen Airport. So they're going to be operating into Aspen this deep winter at a competitive disadvantage as United, as they are here, and also the new market that they're going to be launching service to this winter, Sun Valley, Idaho, where they're also going to be flying CRJ-700s and not the E175s that have much lower landing minimums there. So I've warned American that, you know, this is not just a problem for Gunnison, but this could impact their position as a premium ski carrier if three major ski markets are going to be operated at lower reliability than United and Delta.
And I feel like the consumer notices.
They will. Yeah. If
right?
If like, there is a download.
Notice. Well, I sit in these meetings. But I have like all the data, but I do feel like, you know, like if people have reliability with a carrier and not reliability with another carrier, people, it could affect consumers.
Or with a airport.
What's that?
Or with an airport. Like our reliability at this airport has improved so much that people have noticed.
And it's helped American. Even though American has traditionally been the most reliable carrier here, 2 years ago, they completed 100% of all of their scheduled flights for the entire winter. When United's service started improving from a reliability perspective, all of a sudden passengers had more confidence in booking the market, and Americans' bookings improved as well. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
I have made that message abundantly clear to American Network Planning. I know they're evaluating options.
What type of plane is flying out of Chicago?
It's also going to be the Embraer E175, the advanced version flown by SkyWest. I got that confirmed with United yesterday. And they also confirmed with me that next summer's schedules, they're planning on including Gunnison in the rotation for the newest E175s, which are subfleeted as the E7Ts, which have the higher performance engines. So there should be far fewer payload restrictions and CTAPs next summer as well. And they're definitely planning one of the E7Ts also.
Is there any talk of it continue of eventually expanding Chicago into summertime?
United mentioned that to me yesterday.
Did they?
So yes, that'll be for subject a subject for future conversation. But if we get the SCASD grant to be applied towards O'Hare, that would be something that could potentially be eligible for it as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah, let's write the letter. Let's keep that wide open.
Yeah, and expanded frequency in from Chicago in the future as well in the winter.
Yeah, but we basically told the DOT that eventually you'd like to get to 30 round trips a week, right? No, 30 round trips
for the winter.
For the winter, sorry. Not a week.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Bill?
So other than the delegation to the CR7 from American only, it's all good news.
Thanks, Bill.
Sure.
Up next on the agenda is the executive director's report from Scott.
So I put a report in your packet on page 19. I did want to give you a quick update on transit alerts for our bus passengers. So we use Swiftly that feeds data to transit, but then we also had a dashboard with transit to be able to put alerts out for the passengers. And transit discontinued those alerts and there's a new module place, and it's very expensive. So the option was to go to Swiftly and put our alerts out through them. And so there's been a lull for a couple of weeks while we haven't been able to put out alerts, but essentially transit gave us approval to go ahead and keep putting alerts out through their old system for the next few weeks while we get trained on the new Swiftly system. It was an additional cost of about $3,700 this year, and we signed the contract for that. And also, since we're going to be increasing the size of our diesel fleet, we're looking into potentially having our own fueling station on the lot next to the bus shop. We're going to see if that pencils out. And it would be an upfront cost of somewhere in the $150,000 range probably, but it would probably save us money in the long run. But we're looking into what the costs are really, depending. It all depends on local fire codes and all these other requirements, but we'll bring you a proposal if it pencils out at a future meeting. And the new diesel buses will start arriving in December. That's an option that we're looking at. Dean, did you want to introduce Steve?
Sure. All right, we have Steve Anderson here. So Steve is coming from the school district that has a fleet of 80 buses. His prior also he worked with CDOT. And we're happy to have him on board, and he's going to be our new chief mechanic on board out of Gunnison. So he will be stationed in Gunnison and getting all the repairs and everything for RTA and also for the Alpine Express fleet. So yes.
And Mustang.
And the Mustang as well, yes. Mustang. So we have welcome Steve Anderson.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Yeah.
I wanted to also note that and thank Leah for her work on getting the website going. We're this close. We got a few small things to edit in it, but it's ready to go. I just want to run through it one more time and make sure we've got all the, or at least most of the typos taken care of. And we should have that up and running next week. And I think it looks fantastic. So thanks, Leah. Do you have anything you want to add on that?
No, I'm just excited.
Yeah.
To get rid of the archaic one.
Yeah. And Leah will be managing that website going forward, and it's a new platform, but it seems very intuitive. It seems very easy to update. Even I've made a couple changes. So that's all I've got really on the
report unless there's questions.
And go ahead, Mr. Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Up next is an update on the facility at 301 West Tamichi Avenue.
Okay, we have a memo on page 20 of the packet. And since our last meeting, I followed up with the attorney and confirmed that if there's a substantial cost overrun and the board decides that they want to redesign, that would be something that the architect would be required to do with their project. We'll sign with the new content architect. That was a concern that you raised the last meeting. Unfortunately, we're still waiting on the grant contract from CDOT. I don't know what the holdup is. I contact them every week and it's coming. The last email is they just weren't sure. Oh no, I'll check later and see if we have an update from them this morning because I asked for another one yesterday and haven't been back yet. So I wish I had more of an update for you, but I will keep on them and see what happens. I know the state's having some system-wide budget issues, but I don't believe that that's related to this. I think there might just be a backlog.
How long have you been waiting on it?
Well, it's been a long time, but we did make that change in the procurement process from design build to design bid build. And so that put us back of the line when we made the change to the scope of work. So I'd say it's been a couple months now.
Okay, so the scope of work change, when did we do that? Did we do that in June?
So.
Okay.
I think it was June.
It's a frequent conversation with the state about the length of time it takes to contract for things.
Yes.
The length of time it takes to get inspections, the length of time it takes to get responses. And so there have been executive direct orders from the governor to try to expedite certain kinds of processes. And so I just wanted to get us, I mean, I think since we went to the back of the line in June, it's honestly not been that long.
Yes.
Like it took us a year and a half to get a contract for a grant for Whetstone.
I've heard things like that from other agencies.
And affordable housing is supposed to be on the expedited list. So but keep us in the loop because there's ways we can rattle that case.
We'll be on the agenda until we get it.
We will rattle the case. Yeah. The governor was expedited things as there are hiring visas.
Yes.
Ways. So there could be some staffing issues there as well.
I believe that's true. But I'll keep you posted. And couple items down the list is another one of these.
Okay, up next is the update on the proposed amendments to the BRTA intergovernmental agreement.
Yeah, there's also a memo on this in your packet, and we did get a response from the counties on their comments to the IGA, and there are a couple of them that we need to work through. The main one is they wanted the same thing that the city wanted, to be able to allow staff to be on the board, which is just not allowed. So I sent our response back, and that was forwarded to Matt recently. And I think we should be able to resolve these issues. And as soon as we do, I will get the revised IGA to all of the jurisdictions for adoption.
Yeah, sorry about the delay on that, but Matt was out for medical leave for a while, and he was really the person we wanted to review. Documents, and
this is not urgent. This is something we have.
That was kind of our impression. So we've had some internal conversation around these changes, and then Matt did forward your comments back, and so I think that there's a fairly quick path forward.
Great.
Yeah.
And that amendment was to supplant counselors for staff.
It was just like currently the way the bylaws are written, it allows for appointing electeds or other people, staff, at-large members, like it's not totally clear. And so we wanted to keep the flexibility if possible, because there could be, like one of the conversations here has been about how electeds have so many board meetings to attend. And so I was like, oh, maybe it'd be helpful to have some subject matter expertise in the room. And so just trying to keep the flexibility if possible. But one of the things we've learned is that is illegal.
Yeah. Also required the appointment of alternate directors, which would mean three from each jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And clarifying roles of treasurer, and it's just some of those.
Yeah, I'm officially the treasurer, and I looked at that and I was like.
So yeah, it's changes to all of those things.
I think I'm the treasurer. Great.
I think streamlines everything a little bit and makes it simpler.
Ian has his hand up. Oh, good.
Go ahead, Ian.
Are the staff explicitly excluded?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
It's in the state RTA statute.
Any other questions or comments on the IGA? All right. Next is an update on changing the form of our meeting minutes to recording.
Okay, we're getting close. There's a memo on page 22. We're recording the meeting today. If it works properly, which we hope it will, Leah's done a couple other meetings. If it works properly today, then we'll bring you a resolution at the next meeting. Make the official change. We just had we had a glitch last meeting. We want to make sure it's right before we do it.
Scott, could I ask just to remind me, because it's been a while, I feel like, since we've talked about that, will there be some sort of document that has like timestamps?
Yes.
According, okay. And like just the key decisions that were made?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Not only for the public and you, but also for staff. We need that. So it'll be more of an informal minutes with the timestamp on it and action items taken. And then Matt will sign off, the board chair will sign off on it before it's posted.
Okay.
That will be posted with the audio so people can go right to the timestamp. Also, Leah, you want to talk about the transcript and all that?
I mean, it works great when you're all on Zoom in your separate accounts, but in a situation like this, it doesn't really work because you're all Leah Morrison right now. So
we're going to go without the AI version, right?
Yeah, I have that disabled right now.
Yeah.
I would generally say I'm opposed to this because I think we're peeling back a layer of transparency that requires me to sit and watch 3 hours of something when I could really and should be able to, as a resident, get a high level from quick paragraph blurbs.
Yep.
So generally, I feel like this is kind of dialing things backwards in a way that I don't think is good for the community and for the public. So that's generally my take.
I agree with you. And we had this conversation at the City of Venice, and I think we've talked about how that's what we do. The timestamp component provides both what the decision was, as what we call the background of the item, for people to have that high level, big version of the. To Liz's question, I think the timestamp makes it actually much easier for individuals to find that information and listen to the arguments for or against. Previously, when we were putting out the recording, and if you wanted to learn about the one thing, you'd have to watch 3 hours. The timestamp actually makes it pretty crystal clear as to when it starts and moreover when it ends, because then you've got the next item on the agenda.
Oh, cool.
So I get the notion, but it's been incredibly successful for us, and we very much mirrored the decision-making process when drafting this. So
for minutes approval, we'll just approve the timestamp document.
Well, we actually, based on our charter, the way that we are now approving minutes, it's more, it's not so much, when we review the minutes, and Kathy could speak to this point much better than I could. I'm not reading and reviewing the minutes to ensure that, you know, we've got the right information on there, but rather to just know that the minutes are available. And I'm not going in and making sure that we started this conversation at minute 14:26, but just if there's anything like blatant in the overall flow of the information or some of the decisions that were made, that's more of what the approval of the minutes is about.
It's just the board chair approves.
The timestamp document. The minutes of the meeting are the actual recording. And there's nothing more transparent than that. There's no interpretation, right?
Yes.
It's actually what was said in the meeting as recorded. And I think that's really good from a transparency standpoint. So yeah, the process would be that Leah puts together a timestamp document, and I sign off on it. And that's what people use to access the recording. And if you just want to hear about, if you want to understand the discussion around
air report
or moving to recorded minutes, you can look at the timestamp document. And it says at 27 minutes into the meeting is when this discussion happened. You can fast forward to that point and literally hear every word of it.
It takes
interpretation out of the process completely.
So I don't need to, I feel like I'm being cantankerous, and I don't need to be cantankerous. Like, it sounds like it's working for you guys. I don't know. It's just like, maybe it's just my resistance to change. Maybe I'm an old lady at heart, but like, it just feels like
it creates a barrier for access for some folks. Like I think about the MetRec discussions and folks that have over the year TV and they don't have internet at home and may or may not have smartphones. And it just is this like barrier. It just feels like a barrier. I don't know. Again, I feel like I'm probably blowing it out of proportion, but
I don't know that you are. I mean, I do think that there is value in somebody being able to look at a document and get a sense of what the conversations were, who said what, leading up to an important decision. Like I do think, because that does put an extra, like it suddenly takes a lot more time. It is transparent because the entire conversation is there, but it does take more time for somebody to go through and listen to that whole conversation as opposed to reading like a short paragraph that captures some of it. And I just wonder if there might be a way, like we've got a lot of technology, that is helping make things easier, like the AI components, like, if there is a way to like generate some of that commentary alongside of it, I think that hybrid would be the best option. But I think that we're doing this to try and scale back on the amount of staff work time or not.
Staff work.
Okay.
No, it's going to add more most likely.
Okay. So, I mean, but.
Which I don't care, but.
So is there a reason to like eliminate the minute structure and not just
someone out of the board? So you'll have to have board members.
Some board members, but it also, I talked with Kathy about it. And one of the things that it does is it takes the bias out of the record.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter who you are, no matter how good you are,
yeah,
you're going to have some bias when you're right at taking the minutes and you're listening more to something than other parts of it. And this way it's all out there. So the other thing we could do is continue doing the written minutes and then also post the audio.
I mean, that's
with this time.
We just have
that takes
all of your time.
We just have recordings available for everything, and we have minutes. Like the recordings are not the minutes, but anyone can access the recordings of any of our meetings or anything. So it just like exists as a file.
Have you had any pushback from any of the residents? Anyone not been able to access it? Any frustration technologically?
I mean, if I'm being transparent, it's not like anybody's showing up to these things anyway.
Yeah.
That's the
same. I mean, how many people really?
So I'm not sure who's actually going through to read. I'm sure there are. But no, to your direct question, we have not had any problems. And from our clerks team, have heard that it's a much easier process overall.
I do think, though, that there is historical importance to minutes. I mean, when people say, how did this decision get made? And then they need to go back 10 years.
But that's where the recording comes in.
Yeah, but I mean, is there... So have we been getting complaints about bias in the minutes?
It's not complaints. It's just the inherent act of someone taking notes. And again, Leah's doing a phenomenal job. Our clerk does a phenomenal job. But when you do, and I know we used to think about this when I read our minutes prior to moving to just the recording. In some cases, minute would talk about this discussion went on about the minutes for X number of minutes. Schwartz weighed in, Smith weighed in, fucking Daniels weighed in. At other times, it would be air traffic report was put out and we just kept going. But during that exact item, there were discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that interpretation, that level of detail within a one blurb paragraph, unless there is, in my opinion, definitive structure and definition as to what needs to be captured, is it the board comments? Is it just the staff comments? Unless that structure is there, there's going to be inherent bias within how those minutes are put out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we were trying to avoid or are now avoiding by just, okay, here's the recording. And yes, there's a little bit more of an access perspective to be considered. But if you know that conversation took place between minute 10 and minute 15, you listen to those 5 minutes and you get what you needed in its entirety.
The only reason I'm bringing it up is because if we're talking about accessibility and transparency, it just seems like, well, we have an opportunity to just to provide more information. And maybe it is not always perfect, but there is also the recording attached to it. And so I guess that I'm struggling to see like where the downside is and providing a document that is accessible and helps people understand at a glance what happened in a meeting. There are also, you know, like if you plug a transcript through AI now, like it can generate in a way that is maybe less biased than our human minds.
But so. I think what Leah brought up is that because we all sit in the room together, any AI model will record us all as the same person instead of separating us out.
I did hear that as well, and I think that's important. I'm just plugging it, like, because technology evolves, I know that there are programs that can differentiate between voices, so.
Okay. Can I weigh in a little bit, or I guess address some of the comments? I think if you have, I mean, one thing that's important, whichever way the board chooses to go, is what method is going to, you know, result in the actual minutes. So if it's paper and a recording, one of the two has to be the actual minutes. You can't have both because inherently they may be different. And bias is the word that's been used, but I would say perspective is also a component. Like it puts Leah, for example, in a challenging position of deciding which of the comments that were made in discussions were the ones that were relevant to the board's decision. Whereas if you have a recording, all of it is available and the person listening can decide for themselves, you know, what aspects were, you know, important or important to them or whatever. It's just all out there. So it doesn't have, you know, the human component of us trying to determine what were the topics and the discussions that led to the decision. The other component is the way the minutes will come out, the written summary of the minutes is basically the agenda with the you know, the topic and then what the decision was. So if someone just wants to know, you know, did the board make a decision on moving forward on 301 West Tamichi, they can find that by looking at the paper summary minutes that'll be posted. But then if they want to know more, they can go to the timestamp recording and listen to the whole discussion or whatever parts of it are important to them. So whatever you guys decide to do, it's critical that one thing is the actual minutes. And one of the reasons the city changed is was actually related to an FCPA complaint where the minutes weren't wrong at all, the written minutes, but they weren't complete. And it reflected a decision that hadn't really been made, whereas, you know, had the recording been the minutes, you know, we might have had a different outcome in that analysis just because all of the topic was there and could have been used for our defense, actually. So those are just considerations of, you know, and it's not often that RTA decisions are challenged, but if they are, having a complete record as your actual final record of a decision, I think would be beneficial to the RTA.
Yeah. I see both sides. I also think as far as accessibility, if someone doesn't have internet, they're going to have a hard time finding any information about the RTA.
That's fair.
Period.
Well, it sounds like there are two different purposes that we're discussing here. One is, you know, to insulate from potential legal challenge. And then the other topic that we've been discussing is accessibility and transparency to the public. And so, I mean, I'm fine, you know, I also see both sides. I'm fine proceeding the way that we have planned. I do think that it wouldn't hurt if we had unofficial minutes, such as a transcript at some point. I think that would be helpful in terms of a transparency and accessibility viewpoint for the public.
I will say I recently read the transcript of one of our public hearings, and there was no voice labels because it was all in the room and there were probably 30 different speakers because it was a public hearing. And so the video was there and I read the transcript along the side. And even though like I couldn't tell who, like I just started by reading the transcript because to Steve's point, it was way faster for me to skim the transcript and like find the points, because a lot of us like blah, blah, this stuff, blah, 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 intro, 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 and then meat. And so I was able to go right to the meat and read the substantive comments. And while I couldn't see who the speaker was, it was still a really helpful tool for me for processing the information. And then when I was like, oh, I wonder who said that, I could go right to that timestamp on the meeting and sort of get the clarity. So I hear Leah's point about it being like kind of a muddy way to track things. Maybe I'm trying to figure out a way to make less work, not having redundancy. And so maybe the transcript is the middle ground, even though that you still would go back and just like you said, you would just like a timestamp, you'd still go back and refer to the recording to get the specifics about the particular discussion. like, is that my counselor that said that?
You're like, I said that?
Jeez, I gotta tighten up.
100%.
When did you guys switch to this? I'm going through your September 9th. Is this representative of what this will look like? Your September 9th minutes on the Gunnison page?
I don't know which minutes are out yet. It's...
I think it was
pushed a while ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while.
So this is what it looks like, basically, right?
Yep.
Okay.
It's essentially, it looks a lot like the agenda with the decision on that.
And all of that text is being created by the program, not by an individual?
No, the text is the background that was created by the clerk's department or staff.
Yep, cool.
As part of the initial packet that gets put out, yep. So any background information that gets put out within the packet, that's essentially the same thing. And then the decision made on that is posted on with the timestamp.
Okay, so like the action, for example, Councilor Gelwick moved and Councilor Frazier seconded the motion. That's done by the program, or that was an individual who's still a clerk.
Yeah. So metaphorically, it says it's not going to be. She still has to re-listen and timestamp. She has to manually timestamp.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Just want to be crystal on the process. Totally. Thank you.
Yep.
I think it'll be a little bit more work in the end, but not much. But the first few months, it might be. Is that fair?
I mean, I'm very interested you know, what it looks like, because the audio does generate a transcript to the right. So I'm just curious, though, when everybody's under one account, what that looks like.
Will that transcript be available online?
It's available with the audio. Like when you download the audio,
that's what I was talking about.
Download the transcript with it. It's just not going to separate the individuals. Yeah.
So I think we can do that.
Yeah. If it's an automatic feature of the recording,
it is.
They just keep it. Because it'll be useful for some, it won't be as useful for others.
There's an option to use AI to actually summarize things, and we don't want to do that.
Okay.
Is that right?
See, I would like a transcript so I can have it, my prompt skill set to the information that I know is relevant.
And that I think it will come with it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So that's great.
Okay, we're gonna without objection, we'll just move forward with our plan.
Good job, guys.
We'll bring a resolution to you as soon as we make sure this works.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Good discussion, though.
Next up is the update on the contract with CDOT for second daily Mustang Outrider service between Crested Butte and Denver.
Okay. As I noted on the memo, which is on page 23, I did receive a draft scope of work for the contract late last week, and I had a lot of questions about it. And I've got some answers now. As you may recall, we had agreed to spend $71,000 this year and then around $106,000 or $107,000 to have the second Denver bus come in. JP County was going to do the same. But for some reason, the contract came in at $286,000 per year for us. Asked how they came up with the number, and they said that it's 1/8 of the cost of the whole program, and that's what they figure they're it would be covering 1/4 of the loss of the whole program is what they now believe.
The loss?
Yeah.
The whole busting program around the entire state.
No.
Our
Outrider service.
Particular Outrider service. That's okay.
So it sounds like they anticipate that they're going to, that it loses about half. The fare recovery is about half. And so they need 1/4 of it to be covered. And our share is 1/8, which is $286,000. And it seems very likely that we won't get a contract complete before the end of this year. So we'll probably pay nothing this year because we have to have a contract in place before we pay any. And I just got this last night. Answers. So since we're sharing the costs with Chaffee County, I've asked the CDOT to respond and let me know if they Chaffee County had agreed to this, and I don't know the answer to that yet. And I don't have an email. So I think the best way to move forward is probably to ask for a meeting of the original group, which would include Chaffee County and the director of the DTR. Because it's such a different number than what we had agreed to. And I want to make sure that all of us are on the same page and see if we can resolve the issues. So I'd like to hear your thoughts and whether this makes sense to you. And if there's a maximum amount, we should talk about. I'd like to know that too.
So. Scott, can you what do we have figures on, you know, the success of the second bus, like in terms of ridership?
Oh yeah. Go off. What happened?
Interesting. Well, maybe
we're still, still recording?
Yeah.
Is Kim still on?
Yes.
Kim, do you know anything about the, or Dean, do you know anything about the ridership on the second bus and how it's going?
The ridership is up right now. It is definitely going. We're moving probably like every week, at least about, looks like roughly 900 people.
On the second bus?
Second.
How does that compare to the first?
I'm sorry?
What's the first bus numbers for comparison?
The first, I'm not sure of the first bus numbers right now. Maybe Kim might have. I can
there's
get
a
that
problem
information.
With the screen here.
Yeah.
It's off. So, audio recording. So, how is the...
Back on,
you know? So, Zoom, yeah.
Cable connection.
And can you hear us?
Probably not.
Yes, I can hear you guys. Yes.
Do you know anything about how the ridership looks overall compared to what it was last year at this time?
For the new route for busting?
Well, no, the overall numbers for the, now we're running two trips instead of one. Are we double the numbers or?
We're not quite double yet. No, we're probably a third up. It's been increasing. Yeah. Each month.
I think we'll just use this screen, Leah. I wouldn't. That's not.
That massive. Turn this. Sorry.
Yeah,
that's more.
Thanks, Ken. Is this okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think we should.
Oh, that's. Oh, I log in on you, and then I can.
Let's just use this one, Leah. It's okay. Post it.
Log in, you guys. I'm gonna try not to screech the.
I didn't say anything.
Things.
Oh, this is great. Does that answer your question?
There we
go. I'm just curious about the, like, where they're coming up with that figure. Because
you said that the fare box revenue, when they originally came up with the number, was taken from a sample of days in 2024, and they didn't. They don't feel it's accurate. But I'm talking to, I'm not talking to the head of DTR anymore. I'm talking to
right. Because 900 people a week, if you're doing a $40.
I'm sorry. That's about a month.
Yeah.
Oh, a month.
I didn't mean
that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
900 people a week, you wouldn't have this conversation.
It's, yes.
Large for all these people.
140 people. The ridership is. It has increased, and this has been an unusual month with a lot of ridership. I don't know if the J1s are coming back in now already or what's going on, but also like for the colors and stuff of that nature post the day, the numbers have really gone up. So
that's good to know. Maybe I can bring that into the conversation.
Would it help ridership by starting it in Mount CB?
You know, probably isn't.
And the team
have an idea.
The midday one, it won't necessarily because people can get down to town on the RTA or the Mountain Express. The morning one, we just can't do it in the winter because the road's not plowed.
Just couldn't pull it off.
Not unless the county wants to start plowing at 5.
Right. I think, was it 3 years ago? We did extend it up there and then we pulled it like a month later.
When we first started, we did. Yeah. And it didn't work.
Yeah.
Because of the snow plowing. Safety. Yeah.
Thanks, county. Just kidding.
It's better from the county here.
Is there anybody online for comment? I'm totally kidding.
I would guess that the ridership is up now because of the session. So that's where I want to. It's good to have that info, and I'll bring it to CDOT at their conversation. But my frustration is that it wasn't a communication. It was just here's a contract.
Just wonder if we could do like an MRG.
Well, I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I also, I mean, I would imagine that Chief E kind of gets heartburn over this too, because that's
yeah.
Not
that's almost triple.
Well,
I know.
It's tough.
I know we had this discussion last time and Ian made a really strong point about how we can be right or we can be happy.
Yeah.
But I would like to point out for the record that initially they were going to pay for the whole thing.
Yeah.
So this is the second time that they've come back to us and increased costs dramatically.
Yep. And we're one of the community. I mean, this is one of the most, I think the most successful busting route.
Outrider. Yep.
Yeah, Outrider.
It is.
And we were also promised service to Montrose.
Right.
We still don't have.
That's what I was going to say that as well. In addition, I think I can't remember if that was in the packet where Scott said that to us in an email, maybe, but this
no, it was in the board meeting.
Okay, it was in the packet. But this idea that like the Montrose service is now not going to be covered. And we've talked extensively at this meeting about how there is no public transportation method to get west and how difficult that is for folks for passport renewals, for healthcare, for social security, for like any of the federal connections that we need, like you got to get west and there is no way to do so on public transit. And so for them to just say that it's not viable because they're too close to each other feels like really insulting,
mm-hmm.
frankly, because like, look at what happened when Highway 50 was closed. Like,
yeah.
like they're too close to each other, but I don't know.
These are all good points. I'll bring them to the conversation.
You have all the direction you need. You mentioned maybe talking about a cap.
And yeah, I'd like to know if there's a number that we don't want to exceed.
More than they told us we should pay.
Ian's got his hand up. Ian.
I won't be able to.
Yeah. I mean, I worry a little bit about the viability of the busing program with the state budget. I don't understand enough about the state budget and how that flows to CDOT. And I also worry a little bit structurally running those large buses without a reservation system. It seems like they've just got issues there. Have we ever talked about running a contract separately from CDOT? Like if we're talking about this much money, you know, if we went directly with Alpine, would we be able to get some kind of services?
Well, contract is about $2.2 million. So does that answer your question?
No. So what would happen if we ran a reservation system on smaller buses, either to Montrose or Denver, that didn't involve running the large buses that are going to be empty, you know, even if we significantly increase ridership? Is there a more cost-effective way to do this without doing it through CDOT and busing?
I don't believe so. I can look into it, but I don't believe so. Not for the RTA. I mean, because the cost of these vehicles, the cost of even a small vehicle every day to Denver would be more than $286,000.
What about Montrose?
We can look at it. We can look at Montrose if we want to run service to Montrose. Sure.
I think even if there, I'm curious about exploring this idea. Like I think you're probably right in terms of costs, but I think it would be interesting to see if there was a proposal to run twice weekly service to Montrose. Like maybe it's not every day, but maybe it's some sort of connectivity so that folks have some sort of access and they could plan their orthodontist appointments or whatever around that. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'd be curious to explore it.
We would need, we would need to change our whole philosophy about running outside of our district. We could do that. They have to get permission for Montrose to run on their streets, which probably wouldn't be a problem. I would prefer.
I'm thinking less that we hire the buses and do it, but the same way we're about to, we might pay busing $286,000 for a service outside of our district. We might pay, I know you're not Alpine Express, but Alpine Express.
Destination systems.
Destination systems.
Mm-hmm. We would still need permission.
Okay.
Well, I will say that these conversations have been happening between West Central Public Health Partnership, the Regional Opioid Council, when it comes to just connectivity across the region. And so there may be resources that could be combined from some of these other initiatives that may be worth looking into. So I don't know. Scott, I know that you were probably looking for a cleaner answer, but.
Well, I'd rather focus on this particular contract here, but we can talk about these other things as well. There is likely funds available for vehicles from CDOT to go between Montrose and us. And I would rather that we work with All Points Transit in Montrose
to have a joint effort to do a Montrose to a youth bus. But I would prefer, I would prefer that Mustang Outrider did it. But if they're not going to do it, there are options that we can look at.
So can I suggest that we put this on as an agenda item for another meeting?
Yeah.
Kind of off topic. It wasn't noticed we were going to talk about this. So I think we should discuss about this as another.
No, I absolutely.
And in the interim, as Scott negotiates with Mustang Outrider about the Crested Butte to Denver service, are we comfortable with talking about $280,000 a year, or do we want to give a higher sort of cap number for him to work with?
I feel like that's kind of the struggle that I'm having, is because I feel like whatever we're committing to is not going to go down. And so what is sustainable for the RTA to contribute to when it comes to a very important service?
Well, as you said earlier, I don't want to screw around with the Mustang Outrider service to Denver. That's me. And I understand the idea, but it's the most successful Outrider service in the state. So I want to keep using that model if we can. That's my recommendation. If we want to go to vehicles and all that, we can look into it. I don't think it's going to be affordable for us to run for it. So we'd have to find partners.
Do you think that's part of the reason that they're pressing it, is because we are successful and we have more fares than the others, and they know that there is a flex there? Because we are dependent on it as a community?
I have no idea. I was taken aback by the number.
I feel like before I can make a decision on the number, I need to see how it plays out in all the budget documents we looked at, you know? Like we have reserves, we have flexibility, we based on the budget numbers you've put forward for 2026, we will have more in reserves than we are required to by our own policies.
Sure.
So there is money there, so we could do it, but I think starting to talk about $250,000 or third of $1 million or $500,000, like, it just feels like they keep coming back with higher numbers. And so I feel like I would want some sort of a surety so that our budget projections, we could understand how this factors into that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a number of capital expenditures coming in the pipeline, and we've got grants lined up for some of those things, but like, that's, I mean, that 71,000 feels like okay, 106, okay. But when we start to get to like these really big six-figure numbers, it feels like that's a bigger impact on our overall.
I agree. If you spend that money for this service, it comes from somewhere. It comes from something. We're hoping to get to 15 in service by 2028 winter. And that's going to be pricey. It's in the plan. Well, I think you'll see the reserves actually, they're still way above what we have to.
Yeah.
But they do dip. And we'll talk about the budget a little bit later, but there are some items in there that'll probably cost more than what we have budgeted.
I mean, consistency, I think, is the best way to grow a service. And so that's one of the reasons why I'm feeling like I really don't want to pull the second bus when it has been so successful. Absolutely. But if CDOT's going to come back the next year and ask for $400,000,
yeah.
I mean, yeah. It just,
well, and this may be moot because Chaffee County might say we're not.
Yeah.
Real quick, Ian has his hand up.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think I'm on the same page with everybody else. I'd be comfortable with a similar amount next year. Anything beyond what we paid this year, I'd really want to understand what the multi-year plan was and whether it was a multi-year commitment. I just can't see a significant bump on a one-year basis where they just might completely change it again in a year. So I'm comfortable somewhere in the ballpark where we are. If there's anything more, I don't think I'd want to give prior permission to that, and I'd want to know what the multi-year plan is.
And just to clarify, we haven't spent any money, and we're not going to likely spend any money this year. They've done this. They started the program earlier than they said they wanted to, and then they haven't got us a contract until now. And that likely wouldn't even be executed until next year. So we haven't paid anything. What we agreed to in the budget was 71,000. And what we had understood was going to be 106 or 7 next year. And then they came out with this number. So, so this is going to be the initial contract. And I think whatever this is what's going to be, the future is going to be based on. So I'm with you, Ian. I agree.
I have two questions. One, what are the odds that CDOT comes and asks for money in arrears to cover what happened this year?
I don't think they can.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but I don't think they can.
Another thought is that, you know, this Outrider bus doesn't just stop in Chaffee County and Gunnison County, and have the other jurisdictions been contacted about contributing?
Yeah, but over 90% of the ridership are from Chaffee County and Gunnison County. So they haven't. I think it wasn't.
I know a lot of people catch the bus coming from like Pueblo and up the San Luis Valley. And get on in Chaffee County, even if they're not from Chaffee County. So I think that would be also interesting in that discussion.
Yeah,
Andrew, you had a question?
Yeah, as a member of the public, just wanted to weigh in. I think Ian made a point that maybe hasn't fully been talked about, but I think that the reservation system is awful. And if the goal is to grow ridership, I think there could be a revamp of that. I was looking at using the service a couple of weeks ago, and I had to get there, and I was like, I don't know, what if it's full? What happens? Like, I think if the goal is to grow ridership, that needs some work. So I'm just putting that out there. Maybe that'll bring costs down.
Have a reservation for the second one?
You can't make a reservation. Like, show up and see if you can get on.
But are we the first?
And it's confusing on the website, and it's not.
I've never made a reservation.
People that really want that in the Chaffee County people, because sometimes the bus fills up here.
Those users out of Chaffee, I've seen people not be able to get on.
Yes.
That's painful to see.
Yes.
So a lot of times we don't always have like a MCI that a 57 type passenger vehicle. We have a smaller van hole, which is about a 37 passenger.
Okay.
At times that one will, even by the time we leave from CB to Gunny, and then we get all the way to Buena Vista and the bus is full. And then we still have a stop that we have to do at Fair Play and in Pine Junction, which those two stops, you might randomly get one or three people at those stops. But the smaller bus, when we're running a van pool times, and that's and we randomly put it in either on a morning run or a midday, or a morning run from Crestview or a morning run from Denver. And it just depends on what, you know, that comes up to be as far as the ridership. That bus will be full, the smaller bus will be at maximum capacity, which is very inconvenient a lot of times and understandable, you know, being as it's a first come, first serve. It's difficult to accommodate people at times.
If,
turning them.
Real quick, Steve has a question.
Scott, can you share with the board, and this could be after the meeting or whatever, but the operating expenses and ridership numbers from 2024 for the program? I assume CDOT must share that with us, right?
I don't have it. I could try to get it.
Yeah, could you acquire that? For me, I struggle sometimes with looking at a 3x budget increase without understanding how we got to this point. And did last year run efficiently at X number? And so where is the justification? Something a little more granular, because I do struggle with the 3X. I happen to agree with Ian and most everybody in here. I don't think there's a line in the sand for me personally where I want to see the service decrease or lose that second bus, because just getting this program going over the last however many years has been a pretty heavy lift, it feels like. So, yeah, so I would just like to see that for comparison. And then sure. A lot of times for me too, like when there's an agenda topic like this, where there's a budgetary request increase or something, having a report associated with it that kind of shows this evolution of the cost of the programs. Has it run pretty level and flat? And then all of a sudden we're just seeing a massive jump, or have we seen just kind of this steady, so we can have these expectations and plan for that budget growth?
So whatever the numbers are for 2024, add inflation and double it, because it's twice as many buses.
Cool. Yeah.
I'll see what I can get.
How often, I don't know if you know this, but how often do you see people miss like that morning bus and they wait for the second round?
Yeah.
Not something that can really be captured.
I think it's less now because we have two buses.
With that ultimate up. That definitely affected, been a good impact on, you know, who's not able to get on. If they can accommodate their flight out, you know, from DIA or this is going to do, that does assist them a little bit. One view, taking from here at 1:15 p.m. So that does help that transition. I think we can probably get some numbers. We can get numbers for that transition from Mary and Gunnison. I think we can accommodate those numbers pretty.
So am I understanding? Readily. Sorry, Dean. So, am I understanding from this board that we would
Is there consensus that we would be comfortable with 286,000 in 2026? Or okay. I was like, okay. I heard some like I'm comfortable with these numbers, and I was like, are we talking the new numbers or the old number? So we want to see
cutting the seconds. If we don't hit that number, we lose the second bus. I would go to 286.
Okay.
I don't know that I would.
I think so. It just sounds like we need more information before
you go
their direction, Scott.
Yep, that's fine.
And yeah, like you said, if Chaffee County isn't into it, then all this discussion doesn't work either.
Well, and depending, I could see Chaffee County wanting to insist on a reservation system that works.
Yeah,
sure.
And so maybe we agree to this higher price if they also agree to providing a technology that's functional. Because like we got to split it with Chaffee, right? But like the state's ability to roll out new tech is slower than their contracting process.
It is. This reservation system has been in the works for years.
Years.
That's funny. I feel like there's probably a high school kid.
Right. Put them together.
Hey, Google. Putting a reservation
system together. I can make
together. Five minutes.
Because accommodating for the buses.
I understand.
For a second bus that would be ready to roll right away, accommodating a driver to facilitate.
No, if you have a reservation system, then you can't buy a ticket.
And then
buses full. So.
Buses full.
The reservation system would hurt us.
Yes.
Because somebody could book it out of Fair Play. Seats not available. So.
There's no guarantee besides like the $60 you fork over that you will sit there.
Yep.
This is kind of, it's on the same realm, but I was just wondering if you've run into any issues parking over by Clark's, because I walk that street a lot and I often see like wedding buses and other things parked there, but you guys haven't run into
that? No, usually, and if I encounter that, the guys will call me and I'll marshal. Okay.
Sweet.
It's only blocked for an hour, I think.
And it's pretty been fortunate that, you know, I've got it all posted up there and marked off. So that works out pretty well.
So on the next agenda, we'll put bus service discussion about bus service in Montrose. Is that what we want?
Okay. I think just Steve's point about a little bit more information for this CDOT conversation as well.
Understand
some perhaps some of the numbers for both buses.
Mm-hmm.
That would be very helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd like to see like ridership morning versus afternoon bus. Because if we decide not to fund the afternoon bus and that bus gets cut, like can the morning buses absorb that number or not?
I'm glad you bring that up because another thought that I'll share is just it's a really young route. And whether it's people don't know it exists or it's just taken a little bit to also take, I can't imagine that it.
Well, none of us had the expectation that it was going to be full right off the bat.
Yeah, we started it
really young. So I think. I'm with Steve where if it's we're losing that route entirely and it costs $280 to keep it, I'd be supportive to just give it some time to grow.
Yeah, I mean, we started it and then pretty soon after that, Western shut down for the summer.
Yeah,
they're a big factor. So now we're seeing the ridership increase.
We haven't seen a full calendar year yet.
Right. Oh no,
right?
Yeah.
But I think they started in February maybe. Yeah. It was supposed to start in May and they started in February.
We're rotating back and forth on the start date and it ended up being early.
I was kind of pushing them to get a contract, expecting it to be the 71,000 for this year and the 107. And I was like, well, let's negotiate.
Sure. So you feel like you have at least another beginning of.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Good.
All right, up next on the agenda is public comment. Do you have anybody here online for public comment? Don't think we do. Next is comments from board members and staff.
No comments from board members.
Just to follow up on the, you know, if we have an agenda item for a Montrose service, I think that there are some conversations that would be helpful to have before that meeting. Just to start to feel out whether there might be an opportunity for pooling resources from areas. So Carrie Comerford, I would say Grace Franklin.
You send me the contact.
I can. Yeah. Like, so I'm thinking about, so Southwest Colorado Opioid Regional Council, and also West Central Public Health Partnership. I think that there may be some resources and some interest in putting something like that together.
Great. If you can send me those contacts, I'll get in touch with them.
Any other board member comments?
Any staff comments?
I have one. Kimberly and I are working a new program to incentivize some shout outs for bus drivers. So I created a Google Doc that the bus drivers have all received a form actually. And we're just going to be starting to highlight more of the drivers and their stories and their favorite routes, their, you know, just personalize it a little bit. So you'll see some of that coming out.
Will that be like online or that'll be in the buses? Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, we may maybe do some in the paper. We can talk about that too. But yeah, initially on our social media, on our website. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Thanks. On to new business. First up is update on bus purchases and the impact of tariffs.
Okay, so there's a memo on page 24 of your packet. And at first I thought this was a pretty big deal, especially when I saw the 3 to 15% increase estimates for MCI. However, we have received more information. Originally, we had understood that there would be a tariff charge before the bus entered each of the two assembly lines, one in Canada and one in the US. Turns out there's only going to be the one charge per bus, and it's come in at under $5,000 per bus. So I'm not that concerned about it. I just wanted to give you information about it. And those will have to be paid this year. But I will be requesting, I haven't talked to our CDOT grant manager yet, but I will be requesting reimbursement for the ones that can, the ones that are we're overmatching them.
And how much does a bus cost?
$870,000.
Okay. I think that's important, right? It's $5,000 compared to $875,000. It's not $5,000 compared to $30,000.
Yeah. I think it's like 0.6%, less than 1%.
Yeah, the 3 to 15 was...
That was real dollars.
Alarming.
Yeah. So that's my understanding at this point, though it is very confusing. Yeah. If it changes, I will let you know. So Don't hold me to it, but that's my understanding at this point. So, but if anything gets changes and that you need to know about, I would like enough.
That information comes from the assembly plant, or that information comes
from MCI, New Flyer. They so consultant Andrew Bay and I both signed a non-disclosure agreement. We will be receiving the data that shows how they came up with the numbers. We just sent that to them. So we will be receiving the data that shows those numbers. I'm not as concerned about it as I was. If it was going to be $150,000, I would want to go through it with a fine-tooth comb. But if it's $3,000 to $5,000, I'm going to let Ann look at it and make sure she's comfortable with it. She's very detailed on this.
Any other questions about bus tariffs? Okay, up next is a request for bus route change in Gunnison.
Okay, we did have, there's a memo on page 25. We did have a request from Alpine Destination Systems to change the route, as you can see, from Georgia to Virginia. And the reason is that, especially during the winter, I think, the drivers make the left-hand turn onto Georgia currently. Georgia is a much narrower street than Virginia from Teller. And oftentimes there are cars parked on the north side of Teller at that intersection. And years ago, we had asked the city if they could remove that parking, and they didn't want to do that because it's used for the university, I believe, there. So we did discuss this as an option during our planning process, and I put the language from the plan in the packet. And we reached out to city staff, and they said that they'd likely have traffic data for us next month. Not sure the traffic data will show us much because one block away, the intersection is just the intersection. The reason we did it originally was because there's a four-way stop on Georgia, Colorado, so it's easier for the bus to make that turn. It's two blocks from the highway instead of one. So there's less chance of somebody coming off the highway and their speed's making the turn coming into buses. But I'm not concerned that the drivers will be able to see that.
Yes.
So anyway, that's why it was originally set up that way. But I think for operationally, it probably makes sense, but there will be pushback. I have at least one person who's reminds me every time a bus goes the wrong way on the wrong street. And then, for a while, the other drivers kind of were having their choice, and we asked them to all go on Georgia. So if we do this, we need to have a public hearing on it, not a hearing, but a public opportunity to comment on this. And I think you will hear a lot of resistance.
And it's the Virginia section or the Colorado section?
But Virginia.
Virginia, that's where the...
Yeah, the Colorado section, I believe, is...
it's just the motel.
Yeah. And the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's less... There's people that live on Virginia that will have issues. I mean, there's some houses on that block, aren't there, Diego?
Yep.
So there might be some issues there. I mean, the way it works now, it does work, but it can be challenging. But we don't get complaints, so... I'd like to know how you want to proceed with this. If you want us to put it as agenda item. And if we do, I will let the person who's complained know, and I'm sure they'll want to talk.
My recommendation would be to continue chatting with city staff around traffic. We have a program and process for any individual within the city to request that their street or a area of concern be looked at by city staff. And that could potentially be an avenue through which we get a better understanding of what's happening there, to include parking. And if there's a way to relieve the parking issue for that left turn on the existing route, maybe we can identify that. Alternatively, then my thought would be that, yeah, we move forward with letting that individual or those residents know the potential change and see if they come for us with their concerns.
So I could talk to the city staff and ask again about getting rid of those two parking spots.
I would ask no. So
thank you for the clarification.
And it's actually a hot topic at the moment. We are having a broad conversation around parking in the city in general. One of the directions staff on this week's meeting was to designate certain areas as we please through resolution to not allow overnight parking, perhaps parking in general, et cetera. But separate from that, we have a program that allows for any individual, be it one person or let's say it's a neighborhood, they can come together and put forth a request that the city looks at a certain area, street or intersection to understand how traffic is moving within that. Based on those results, we then can take action, be it a stop sign, whatever it is, or nothing at times. That could be a good avenue for us to go through and say, hey, let's look at Teller and what is it?
Georgia.
Okay. And understand what the traffic looks like, understand what the parking looks like. And we then have some data to make a decision.
I'd also say look at Virginia and Colorado.
Yes, yeah. Look at both.
And I have heard drivers complain about this turn, and I have heard about accidents with parked vehicles that were there. I don't know. I mean, this is driver chit chat. So I don't know. You never know. I mean, I can't even tell you who the driver was. It was a long time ago, but So I just think in terms of like safety, that might be, to me, like safety is going to drive more than it's going to have a lot of weight. Safety is going to have a lot of weight in a further discussion.
Well, like you said, Laura, that's a good point. A lot of times when the driver is coming off a Teller and making that left on to Georgia, a lot of these, you know, the college students are coming in and they're making that beeline through there to get to class, and they're headed east. And the driver's trying to come through that intersection. They're making a turn off of Colorado or whatever and going up Georgia, and all of a sudden that car's right there in your face. Yeah. Or that is what they ended up doing is they ended up making that sidewalk another 6 or 8 feet wider. So they moved the double yellow lines further over for a narrower two-lane traffic flow. Whereas Virginia, wide, nice, easy turns, safer to to make the turn. Traffic is not, you know, that volume of traffic making that turn from there onto Virginia, if they're headed west or east, it would be much more accommodating. A lot of times also, the students are parking right there on Georgia, and they're parked even all the way to the yellow line, over the yellow line. I've taken pictures. I think I've sent some to Scott at times at how they're just, they're over the yellow line parked. And I'm sure it's a student of Western, and the bus driver, it's very narrow, very narrow.
Pretty wild to think that we're having a conversation about narrow streets in Gunnison.
I know.
Yes. Wait, which? But it is, I mean, it's a big bus.
Yeah, I don't want this bus going through CB.
Much wider.
So I think, yeah, proceed with the noticing and the discussion and the data collection.
Do you think that that process can be achieved before winter starts?
I wonder if when I sent that request to Anton, if that wasn't why he said we'd have data the next month.
Part of it, I mean, like I said, we are doing parking. We're having the parking conversation. And while the studies took place last year, it's still part of the conversation. Neighborhood services would be, neighborhood services and public works will be the ones that work with this in the middle. So I would start there. And if through our website, I can pass it along your way too.
Please do.
Yep.
Yeah. Is there a form on the portal or something I can?
Yeah, there's two approaches, and we can chat offline if you'd like to.
Great, thank you.
Understanding. But yeah, it's pretty effective. Most results show that, yes, there's a sphere here and there, but by and large, people are following the speed limit. That's really what it aims at.
Good. Thank you.
Any further questions or discussion about route change?
Well, I think what I'll do is try to get some of the data from the city, but I'll keep this on the agenda. Does that make sense? Thank you.
All right, up next is a discussion regarding a possible memorandum of understanding with Gunnison County for TA to provide aid and assistance to the county in the event of an emergency.
Okay, so as you probably remember, Mike has been going to the county emergency management team meetings for last 6 to 7 months. And one of the things that's become apparent is we don't really have a way to interact with the county if we're in an emergency that they needed our assets. And Matt had asked me a while ago to create an emergency management plan for the RTA. And so I checked with some of our peers, and it seems like, you know, that's not something that most of them actually do themselves, and the larger ones will, but what seems to make sense is to become part of the county's emergency response if there's a problem, and offer our assets to help their management team so that an emergency manager is actually going to TH habits. So San Miguel County has a MOU with the reporting group as to how they interact in case of an emergency, and I would like to model it. So it's a basically one-page MOU, model an MOU off of theirs and to the county emergency.
Have you had any conversations with county staff?
No, Matt asked me to bring it to you guys.
This Matt?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, we got a bunch of Matts.
I was thinking about doing that, but like, no, it's actually better
if
it's authorized by you guys before we do.
I think beginning the conversation with county manager would be very helpful.
Okay.
I feel a little conflicted because we haven't talked about it as a board.
Yeah, it's hard for me to tell you that it's a good idea to ask the county to do this if I don't know if the county is receptive to the.
Well, we're asking the county, what we'll be asking the county is if they would like us to provide assets in the case of.
Yeah, I mean,
chime in,
so 1 second, just because I just sat through a whole session with this, I passed a meeting. This is very normal, and it's usually with all municipalities, fire, police, all transit systems have these MOUs in place just so that we're all on the same page in the case of an emergency. So it's not, you know, set in stone. It is an MOU, not a contract. It's just a friendly agreement. But yeah, we're a little behind the times on emergency responses. And so yeah, there was a whole day worth of this talk at CASTA. So yeah.
I think it makes intuitive sense. I think that I'm just talking about usually when we like our stuff takes direction from the board and we haven't had that conversation. And so I would say I could recommend starting with the county manager.
Sure.
And does that sound good to you?
This is the way to do it from an incident command standpoint. Incident command goes like this. And so having the emergency services coordinator run this and tell us what they need, that's the way to do it.
That's what I thought too. Makes intuitive sense.
Well, and we do there's a lot of tabletop exercises. There's a lot of emergency management planning happening. Yeah, exactly. So I would imagine that RTA has been considered at some level.
Oh yeah, Mike goes to those and Kim has been to them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
But we don't have any MOM.
Okay, great.
Place.
Pursuit.
MOU. So it's just it's a way to offer our services so that they know that it's available. Formalize it, I guess. Because we would do it anyway. Okay, I'll bring it to Matthew.
Any more questions or discussion on this agenda item? Okay, up next is the draft of the 2026 budget and budget assumptions.
I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Okay, I'll just run through a few of the highlights. Okay, so it starts on page 28. Sales tax is budgeted 20% over last year, over this year, excuse me. And so far this year, we're at 6.4% over last year. So I think it's a conservative budget. Budget includes the purchase of four of the large buses using federal funds, which will cover a little over 80% of those vehicles. We'll also purchase two smaller buses using CT funds to cover 2/3 of those costs. We're planning to build the enhanced bus stop and office space for a cost of about $100,000 this year if we can get the contract. That would be for the design portion, and then $1.4 million next year. So we're looking at a total cost of about $1.5 million proposed in this budget for that facility. For air service, we're budgeting the full MRG costs of $204K for Houston and $308K for Chicago. And we might be able to, hopefully by the time we finalize the budget, we'll know whether or not we can use the SCASD grant and reduce that cost by about $156,000. It includes $450,000 for senior services. Our commuter bus would run the same schedule as this year and last year, 41 trips in the winter, 33 the rest of the year, round trips. It also includes a contribution of $50,000 to the county-led Highway 135 corridor project, planning project. This is money that we actually had budgeted this year that will likely be spent next year instead. Total revenues are budgeted at $11.46 million and expenses at $12.26 million. So it will drop our cash reserves by about $800,000, but we would also increase our capital assets by about $5.6 million. And that's due to all the grants. That includes the capital assets would be the six new buses and bus stop and office facility. So if you have any questions, thoughts, additions, deletions, directions, take them, and we'll try to get this finalized and brought to you.
Questions?
I wondered if we should have some kind of budgeting set aside for planning for the Brush Creek Intercept lot. We did sign the contract last week for the Safe Streets for All grant. So we are hoping that grant actually, the money arrives this year, next year, soon. TBD, as we've discussed, the uncertainty there, but we did sign the contract. They signed the contract, it just been submitted. So there should be construction proceeding in 2026 with the Brush Creek roundabout. Mm-hmm. And I would think that while that whole area is under construction, we should do a lot and not do that whole area under construction and then 2 years later put the Brush Creek Intercept under a lot. That seems inefficient. So that was the only thing I saw that as in the plan for 2028.
Yes.
And I just didn't know if we have like designs done, if there's dirt work that could be done, I thought we might want to accelerate that planning so that we are shovel ready when the shovels arrive.
And any idea what that would cost? So I can just put that in the budget. Of planning. I can look into it.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I mean, the corridor plan is going to be $600,000, I think, for a site plan. I mean, we're doing the whole transit center supposedly for $1 million. Not transit center, enhanced bus stop.
1.5.
1.5 million. So, I mean, somewhere between.
$1 million in design fees.
Yeah, $100,000.
But there's no building involved with this. So it would just be the engineering of the lot, right?
And then I don't know if there's paving or striping or.
That's construction. That's later on.
Yeah. So I don't.
So are you telling me you want just planning or do you want to talk about planning and construction?
I was thinking planning. I was thinking planning, but I guess I'm proposing it to this board. If that whole area is under construction in 2026, 2027, do we really want to start construction on the Brush Creek intercept lot in 2028 after this intersection's done? Or I don't know the sequence.
I know what you mean though. I think it makes sense to be well prepared if and when the shovels come.
Yeah, it could just be saving mobilization costs.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think there is some conversation going on with the Slate River Working Group about how to improve that trailhead experience for the month of the year that it's insanely busy. And so I think just like whatever the plans are, thinking about it as a primarily for us, I told them to talk to you because I was like, well, there's a vision for what happens there. So make sure that, you know, you're aware of what already has been planned for that area. I know like East River Sanitation District is worried about, that's the Skyland Metro District, essentially. They're worried about safety of that area. And so I was like, things are happening there, but we might want to accelerate that planning. My thought was the planning process but maybe in 2027, I would have a conversation with John Cattles at the county about timeline for, or Martin Schmidt, excuse me, about timeline for that roundabout intersection. Because if we could save on mobilization costs. And if we're moving dirt anyway, let's move it in the way that is required for the intercept lot to be built.
It's a great idea.
Great. Sounds good. I'll put a placeholder in there and I'll talk to Martin and just see what he thinks a good placeholder would be. I mean, it's a little amorphous because our long-term budget is like $500,000 to basically degrade it and make it usable, not pave it and do that whole thing, because the state has told us that they expected to do it properly. It would be for over $4 million. We're not gonna, we don't have the funds to do that. But what we can do is do something similar to what we have at Ohio Creek right now. Yeah. And that's something that we can afford to do. And then improvements can come later.
There just might be like partners might want to put a porta potty there, or they might want to have like.
Yeah, especially if it's like that Slatehead conversation is a great nexus for this.
Yeah. So I think just making sure that whatever we do as space set aside for some of these other other needs that are arising. Okay.
Great. I'm thinking putting like $100,000 in there just to plan for now. And then if it ends up being $500,000, we'll amend the budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Good advice.
Any other comments or questions on the proposed budget?
So I'll take that change, and I'll also be updating the budget with information that we get along the way, Bustang and other things. And things become more clear towards the end of the year as to what we're actually going to spend, and then I can forecast better for the following year. So I'll bring in a budget for approval, and I'll make sure to note the changes.
Actually, the only other thought I have, it's not big, but accounting for possible tariffs on bus purchases for next year.
We are paying them this year, so we should be good.
Okay.
But there's quite a bit of bus replacement happening over time.
Yes.
So just making sure that we factored in.
If it stays true to what it is, so I think we're good. But I hear you, yes. I'll double check on that.
And I'll just comment, I did see that in one of the years, 2027, I think, we switch from paying more for CNG and less for diesel to switching to paying more for diesel and less for CNG as the bus fleet gets replaced.
Yes.
So that was just one thing I was like, well, for me, I'm glad to, that just a comment that we, yeah, it's in 2027, that kind of flip-flops and we start to have
yes
more
diesel expenses. Oh, not, it doesn't quite flip-flop. But basically CNG costs go down over time and diesel goes up over time. And there's a big jump in diesel costs in 2027. So just to flag that for the board as a change, I mean, because it is a policy change as well as a budgetary change.
And it will, it'll actually change in 2026 a little bit. I don't know if I've got that right. I'll double check.
It's up a little bit, but there's like a doubling.
Yeah, because at that point we've got the full diesel fleet and we're running seven or plus the two CTE buses. So we're running nine instead of two.
Yeah.
So I'll go through, I'll double check on the fuel and see if I
Can the CNG costs don't go down substantially over time.
No, because we're still going to have CNG buses. Yeah. Make fuels in service. So
yeah.
I put all the increase into diesel. And they come down to it in the end. Properly today. Good to know.
Yeah, I just, you know, that's a shift in our direction.
I'll see if I can get that as accurate as possible.
Cool. We're looking at 27, 28. I mean,
yeah, that's the next discussion.
Not at all. Well, no more in time.
We will.
Any more questions or comments on the 2026 draft budget? Okay, moving on to the 2026 to 2030 5-year financial plan.
So I'll just run through the highlights again, if I could. It's very similar to the plan that you saw last month in the CTE presentation. Understanding if that's the CTE expansion, if that's our 5-year plan. So included essentially the same document as last month with a few updates. Basically continuing the current bus service levels through the winter of 26-27, so another 2 winters. Then increasing the spring, summer, fall service to 41 round trips in 2027. So that means 26-27, we'll run the 41 round trips and continue it for the whole 12 months. And then in winter of 28, we go to 53 round trips, which includes the 15-minute service from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. And also includes upgrading the last 2 bus stops in Gunnison and adding the bus stop at CB South in 2027. And purchasing buses to replace our current fleet over time. A lot of that is grant dependent. No idea how that's going to pan out. There's a, as we noted, $500,000 placeholder. That's a placeholder. The decision is not in the future, obviously, especially after we do some planning. Good. And also continues the flight programs and senior programs. So that's really the overall picture there. And I'm not going to take any comments. Vice President, next meeting. I will work on the CNG diesel thing as well.
Any questions or comments on the 5-year financial plan? Okay.
Thanks.
Sorry. I got one. Only that we talk about MRGs every year, and I think we should just keep doing that. I do see that the Houston 250 is budgeted every year for the next 5 years. This board continues to have discussions about whether or not we think MRGs should be perpetual or whether we think they should be startup incentives. So I know we talk about them every year.
Yeah.
But just like, again, when I'm thinking about where the budget intersects with policy and where the budget intersects with the discussions that we've been having. And so I understand budgeting it for the next 5 years, but I just want to say that I feel like this board is still, a decision is still pending about our sort of philosophical take on MRGs as a perpetual subsidy or a startup subsidy.
This is the planning document, it's not an actual budget, so it's not getting anything.
So just to be discussed further.
No, sure.
Do you want to do it forever?
You also have in here the increased fund balances can be used to expand other markets in the future. And since we were focusing on the 3 hubs, is there something that this board should be aware of the kind of next market?
Not right now, but we've talked about Austin. We've talked about the possibility of that. There's other options that could come to us in the future. And I guess I should probably amend that to say not just other expand to other hubs, but expand in the current hubs as well.
Okay.
So. I would also suggest that that should probably be part of an upcoming strategic planning retreat, since that hasn't been done in about a year and a half.
Yep, we're gonna do it every 2 years.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll plan to have a board retreat to discuss air service strategic planning in spring.
Any other questions or comments on the 5-year financial plan?
Up next is a discussion of contract negotiations with direct management services.
We have a couple of options. We can continue to have this discussion in an open public meeting. We can, because it's a contract negotiation, choose to do this in executive session.
I'm comfortable
to either Scott and or the board's input.
I'm comfortable either way. Done it both ways with you guys. If you want to go to executive session, I'm comfortable with that. If you don't, I'm fine.
Board's will.
I have some comments about it. I'd like to dig into it. This is the first time I've seen one of these, because it's been about 4 years. And so this is, I have like some pretty substantive things I'd like to dive into with this. So I don't, it's up to you guys if you want to do that in executive session or open session. I'm fine either way.
I traditionally have done these things in executive session.
Yeah.
When relative to personnel and contracts and stuff.
So yeah.
I guess I would put in a vote for executive session.
I'll second.
Okay, they need more. They need a real motion.
Yes.
Here, do like that.
Read the official motion for us, please.
My punishment. Pursuant to Section 24-6-4024 of the Colorado Revised Statutes, I move that this meeting of the Board of Gunnison Valley Transportation Authority adjourn, and upon affirmative vote of 2/3 of members present, reconvene in executive session for the sole purpose of determining positions relative to matters that may be subject to negotiations, developing strategy for negotiations, and instructing negotiators as authorized by CRS 24-6-4024E for the purpose of discussion and negotiations with Truex Management Services for the services of Scott Truex.
Adoption of
second,
sorry. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to enter executive session and a second. So
I'm trying to record enough until Matt reads his.
Yep. At this time, we will stop the recording and do
we vote on the motion?
We need to vote. Oh, sorry. Yes, we need to vote. I'm sorry. All in favor of entering executive session, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
So we have a 2/3 majority.
Did you read the statement that you have to read before we stop the recording? Thank you.
Right. And who, I guess we need to decide who's going to be in attendance. Scott and the board, anybody else? Leah will be here as well.
She doesn't have to be.
No, okay. I don't think so.
We can have Kathy if you want.
I think.